You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago, and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, on Instagram at Locked On Bulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up there with your reaction. We have a ton of reaction from Bulls fans to get to later in this episode. So make sure to use that voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Welcome back, Matt, from the weekend. I know, unfortunately, the Bears game did not go the way we wanted it to. Bulls go down to the very last possession on Saturday night. That didn't go the way we wanted to either. Nonetheless, though, nice to have NBA regular season back in action because we are just two games in and already have a brawl. But what's going on? How you doing?
Doing all right, Jordan. You know, all things considered, another Bears loss Monday. So nevertheless, we power forward. And the Bulls game against Detroit, the home opener, at least was very entertaining. A close game, a tough loss. Zach LaVine just looked dominant again. Another 30-point night. He puts himself next to Bob Love and MJ.
You ain't no Michael
only
Jordan.
The third Bulls player in franchise history to start the season with back-to-back 30-point games. And you think after he hits that big three to tie it, he's going to get the ball again after the Bulls gave up that easy two to Ish Smith and are down two with the final possession in about 4 or 5 seconds left. You're thinking, all right, here comes the LaVine three for the win. And he just forgot the part where you need to hold on to the ball before you shoot it.
So we'll get into that game in a minute here because there's a ton to get to. But I'm glad you brought that up first and foremost. Pretty good company to be in. Zach LaVine with Michael Jordan and Bob Love.
You ain't no Michael Jordan.
Plus point games to start the season. Very, very good company. And Zach LaVine looks just excellent on the offensive side of the ball. Defense, a little bit of a different story, but still. At least it's nice to see those stats going up there on the offensive side of the ball. But first, I wanted to get to around the NBA. How about the Rondo and Chris Paul fight? That,
amazing.
I think, took over NBA Twitter and the headlines from the NBA this weekend.
Foul occurred before the gather.
And he never put the ball back down.
And I think another technical foul's been handed out. Now Ingram looks like he's confronting Jason Phillips.
Well, the technical foul was on Ingram for shoving James Harden after that play.
I'm not sure why, what happened.
Ingram, who's usually pretty mild-mannered, was hot. Now Paul punches a throw. Paul and Rondo throwing punches. Ingram comes in. He's throwing punches. Security trying to separate. So are some of the teammates. Boy, that quickly erupted into something ugly.
Absolutely amazing. Now we're calling it Spitgate because we're not sure if Rajon Rondo actually did spit in Chris Paul's face or not, but then it turned into punches being thrown. The one thing that we did find out, though, is Brandon Ingram is about that life. He was ready to go. Fists were ready to fly. Ultimately, though, turns out all three of these guys suspended, I think, 4, 3, and 2 games, respectively, between Brandon Ingram, Chris Paul, and Rajon Rondo. Funny thing is, though, the last time a player was suspended for more than 2 games for fighting comes all the way back to last year with Bobby Portis, who was suspended 8 games. But overall, pretty good weekend of NBA action this weekend outside of the Bulls game.
Amazing, man. I mean, not only do you have the fight, but you have all these insane scores where teams are putting up like $140, $135, and not an OT, in regulation. It's like I feel like there's going to be an even more aggressive upward curve on the average offensive night across the league. Defense is just becoming not a thing in the NBA. It's like these scores look like 80s NBA scores, early 90s NBA scores, where, you know, if your team doesn't break 110, it's like something tragic happened. So we have all these high scoring games, which, entertainment value, I suppose. Sure, why not? And the fight between Rondo and CP3, it was amazing. I was just getting home from the Saturday Night Bulls Outsiders episode, and one of my Bulls Outsiders buddies, John, texted me and was like, "Dude, Rondo and CP3 are fighting. Oh my God, get in front of a TV or start streaming ASAP." So I immediately hopped on my computer and started streaming that game. And I caught just like as they were breaking it down via replays and reviews, and it was awesome. Like, I love that Rondo and CP3 got in a fight because they're two of the most unliked guys across the league. I don't know about you, Jordan. I'm definitely on Team Rondo. I think CP3 is one of the dirtiest players in the league. I think he had that punch coming for years. Team Rondo all the way.
Yeah, and Rajon Rondo and Chris Paul are known not to like each other either. And the funniest part of all of this is Chris Paul is head of the players union. Like, mm-hmm. that's your player rep, and he's getting into fights on the floor.
And I thought it was funny that people were giving LeBron crap for, you know, protecting and tearing CP3 away from the fight as opposed to his teammate Rajon Rondo.
That's so stupid.
Hey, guess what? LeBron and Rondo don't have a great relationship either. They've butted heads a lot in the past. And, like, CP3's his boy.
And look, LeBron was just trying to break the fight up. He was just trying to grab anybody from further escalating punches being thrown. So I don't necessarily think he was grabbing for Chris Paul over his teammates. It was just, let's break this thing up.
No, I think people blew that way out of proportion. Yeah, he was just trying to end the fight. Whereas Brandon Ingram, weighing, 150 pounds soaking wet, was like trying to escalate things.
Oh, man. So a couple other things, though, I did want to get to around the NBA before we break down this Bulls game. One, man, how about Trae Young?
Monster.
Trae Young last night, 35 points, 11 assists, a plus 19 in the plus minus. Dude was 6 for 14 from 3, 13 for 23 overall. Man, like all the doubt that we had at draft time earlier in the summer, talking about, oh, this kid's never going to turn into all the overhypedness about his game. Man, at least with Atlanta, there's not much there, so he can kind of go off the way he has been the first couple of games. But, yeah, he looks like the real deal. He may not be the next Steph Curry, but he is going to be a damn good shooter and damn good player.
It's early, small sample size, but that was certainly the good version of Trae Young, who could turn himself into a quality player in the NBA. I think he's still... The Hawks will have to do everything they can to mask him on the defensive end just because he's so undersized and he can't really play a whole lot of defense. But, man, when the kid gets hot, and not only the three-point shooting, which, of course, everybody was obsessed with him in his Oklahoma days, but as a facilitator, like a 35-11 night for your point guard as a rookie, that's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, I have to agree, too. So, and look, he held his own on defense, at least against guys like George Hill and Colin Sexton. Sure, George Hill went 7 for 9 and 16 points last night, but still holding his own at least a little bit on the offensive end. And the Hawks picking up their first win. The Bulls still winless to start the season 0-2. So let's get there. But before we do, Bulls made a small move before Saturday night's game. They decided to waive Ashik and Destroy, RIP. Ashik and Destroy, waive him.
RIP Turkish Delight.
Waive him for point guard Shaquille Harrison. Goes by Shaq Harrison, former Suns point guard who they decided to let go. And just from the comments that he had said just joining the Bulls, that he said he was surprised the Suns waived him but wishes them good luck. So it looks like they're not confident at all in this point guard debacle that they have going on with the Bulls here. So I don't know. It's not a great confidence boost when you're picking up Phoenix Suns point guards, am I right?
Yeah, plural. Plural. We added Tyler Ulis, and then the Bulls were like, hey, might as well. Let's just keep picking off the Phoenix Suns trash heap. That makes a lot of sense. Maybe like Phoenix is going to become the new Ames, Iowa, where it's like, hey, is that guy from that place? Yeah, let's get him. Let's get him on the roster. I mean, like, he's an interesting prospect. He's certainly known for his defensive efforts at the point guard position, which is nice because behind Chris Dunn, there's not a whole lot of defense being played in this Bulls front in the Bulls backcourt right now. Blakeney can't play a lick of defense. Campaign has his moments where he can be, you know, aggressive and come up with a steal or two, but offensively, Campaign looks like a guy who doesn't have a whole lot of trust, even as the backup at this point. It's just another person to throw into the carousel of backup point guards that Fred Hoiberg is trying to make work behind Chris Dunn. And I mean, the thing that I am thinking about most with all of this point guard turnover right now and all of these different point guard options is, thank God we get Chris Dunn back tonight.
No, I know.
Thank God.
I know.
You know, we have our doubts about what Chris Dunn can become and whether or not he could become a reliable, even top half starting point guard in the league for this Bulls team. But, oh my God, considering all the other options we're juggling in his absence, it's like, dude, Chris Dunn could not be more happily welcomed back tonight.
Just wanted to follow up on Shaq Harrison real quick. So, of course, this is so typical Bulls. He was a four-year player at Tulsa. He shot for a career 1.2 threes per game, shot 21.6% from three. So not a three-point shooter. A guy that averaged 3.5 assists in college, averaged 11.1 points per game. So nothing crazy, but has a little bit of athleticism. But once again, one of these four-year guys that is now 24, going to turn 25. So I don't know what kind of impact he's going to make with this Bulls team. But I would imagine that if Cameron Payne doesn't have a repeat performance like he did against the Pistons, that there might be some shuffling to be done here. So
his career high, 17 points. Sure. Yeah. What a bounce back game for Campaign. But yeah, I mean, Shaq Harrison, definitely a gifted athlete. Some may not know, he actually turned down a football scholarship from Kansas. He turned down an offer from Kansas.
I think everybody would turn down a football scholarship to Kansas.
Yeah. Kansas, not exactly a football powerhouse, and opted to play hoops for Tulsa instead. But clearly a guy, I mean, you mentioned his woeful three-point percentage numbers. This is not someone the Bulls are bringing in to be a scoring point guard off the bench. He's a guy that they are bringing in to maybe make a difference on the defensive end, because through preseason and through two regular season games, Fred and his staff have looked around. I'm sure Gar and Paxton have looked around and said, well, yeah, the way the league's trending, everyone's giving up 110 a night, but oh God, we might give up 130.
Before we get to breaking down the Detroit game, and there's a lot of good things to get to, Pistons and Bulls on Saturday night, Bulls are playing at home on Wednesday night. Perfect opportunity to get your fix of Bulls basketball going up against the Charlotte Hornets Wednesday night. We all love a night out, and the perfect source to get your tickets is at Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving our listeners here at Locked On Bulls an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive $20 off Yes, that's $20 off, $200 or more, to save even more money. So go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off, $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theaters and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app, enter the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off, $200 or more as a new Vivid Seats customer. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Be back here in 60 seconds on Locked On Bulls. Stay with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls, you can hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, on Instagram at Locked On Bulls. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. So a 118-116 loss for the Bulls. The Bulls start 0-2 to begin the season. Pretty entertaining game, Matt. You know, before we get to all of the negatives of this game, pretty entertaining game. We had mentioned Zach LaVine before this. Cameron Payne had a career-high 17 points. Came out after kind of acknowledging the criticism he's been getting from the fan base and followed it up with a pretty decent night. 17 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, only 1 turnover. He was 0 for 3 from the 3-point line, but at least got to the free throw line a handful of times there. So Cameron Payne, at least for one night, looking like a competent NBA point guard for what it's worth. But outside of that, off night for Bobby Portis from offensive side of the ball, 2 for 12.
Yeah, it was at some point you were going to have a night where Bobby didn't look like the second best player on this team behind Zach LaVine. Because Bobby really hadn't had a bad game in preseason, and his first game against Philly was yet another impressive display, particularly his dominant offensive first half. He kind of cooled off in the second half. But the thing I liked about Bobby's game on Saturday is that he struggled from the field, as you said, just 2 of 12, missed all 4 of his 3-point attempts, but he found ways to be a factor in the game outside of his scoring. He pulled down 14 rebounds and dished out 5 assists. And the 5 assists in particular, I loved to see, because you expect Bobby, as a guy getting a lot of minutes for this Bulls front court, to be someone who can pull down 10-plus rebounds a night. If he gets the minutes, he should be averaging close to 10 rebounds a game. So the 14 rebounds is nice, but kind of expected. But people kind of knock Bobby as being a shoot-first, shoot-second, shoot-third guy on the offensive end. Never really known for being a facilitator, whereas, you know, I think the rookie Wendell is already a very talented and underrated passer for a big man. Bobby's never really had that as an element to his offensive game. So I love to see that he was looking to get looks for his teammates on a night when his shots weren't falling.
Totally, totally agree. And I think this might be another step in the evolution of Bobby Portis, is the fact that, yeah, even if shots aren't falling down, he can do other things. And that leads me to the final possession of the game, Matt.
Ugh.
The final possession of this game, the final two possessions, I should really say,
because
the Bulls had an opportunity to come back and win this game after giving up a layup to Ish Smith.
Ish Smith to his left, to his right, driving, scooping, scoring. With 5.4 left, Ish Smith able to get down the lane and somehow get it up and good.
The biggest question here is, Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker were your guys in your front court to start this possession. One defensive possession, that's it. You leave Wendell Carter Jr. on the bench, and of course, things go wrong. Jabari Parker gets burned on a move by Ish Smith on a crossover, and Bobby Portis, by the time he realized he's got to come over and slide over and help out, Ish Smith was already at the bucket and getting the go-ahead layup. Question here is, what the hell was Fred Hoiberg thinking? Why do you leave your best defender on the bench for one possession? Like, what?
I don't know, man.
What is that?
It was dumb. And his explanation and reasoning, because of course he was immediately asked after the game by the media, hey, why no Wendell? Why Jabari on the floor in that last possession scenario? Fred's two reasons were, well, the Pistons went small, so I kind of wanted to counter with that, or go along with that. And also, I wanted to leave the guys on the floor who got us back in the game. But, like, what do you mean by that? Okay, so LaVine hit a big three, and other than that, the Pistons committed really dumb fouls that put the Bulls on the free throw line and allowed them to shrink that gap. So you're going to give them credit for that? You're going to give Jabari any credit for Jabari's defensive effort being a reason they got back in the game late in the fourth? Like, no, absolutely not. And with the 24.6 seconds that were on the clock when Ish Smith and the Pistons started that final possession, and the Bulls had a timeout. They also had a foul to give, by the way, which they didn't use, but they had a timeout. So if you want Jabari back on the floor, if you get a stop and a rebound, or even if they score, the Pistons score with time left and you have one more possession to either tie or win, use that timeout and get Jabari back out there if you want him as an offensive weapon and an option somewhere on the floor to take a shot. But Wendell, your best rim protector, not being in for that defensive possession and Jabari being in for that defensive possession, no excuse for that. I'm sorry, but the two reasons Fred gave were bullshit, in my opinion.
Any chance this is a, hey, look, front office, here's Jabari closing out a game, and this is what it's going to look like. So was that a test to, hey, this is Jabari out there for the final possession. This is what it's going to look like once Lauri Markkanen comes back. This is what you wanted to do, was force him into lineups late. This is what's going to happen. He's going to get burned on defense. Is this kind of a Fred's way of showing the front office, like, hey, this isn't going to work. Like, the way that you guys pictured this working throughout the season, this is exactly what's going to happen late in games when we're close. Any chance that Fred stuck him out there, stuck with that same unit because of that? Because I was getting a little bit of vibes that was like, okay, out, like, any competent head coach would understand Jabari Parker's probably your worst defender on the team, so why the hell would he be out there for a defensive possession? Is this any way of Fred saying to the front office, look what you guys gave me,
this is what I kept
in the final seconds of the game, and it turned out exactly the way that we thought it was going to?
I definitely heard that, and I believe our friend Darnell Mayberry over the Athletic had that as a hypothetical in his Bulls Pistons Nuggets column after the game. I also heard some people on Bulls Twitter saying, well, you know, maybe Fred wanted to leave Jabari in there for that big defensive possession to show that he has faith in him and to say, hey, Jabari, if you want to be a go-to guy on this team, be on the floor and get a stop when we need a stop. And maybe that if Jabari were able to come up with, or at least collectively as one of five on the floor, a stop on that possession, it would build some confidence, show Jabari that Fred has confidence in him, and maybe motivate Jabari a little bit more to try on the defensive end. That was a theory I heard. I don't like that theory. I think that theory is dumb. Jabari clearly right now does not seem motivated in any way to get better or try on the defensive end. It's not me hating being a Jabari hater. Film don't lie. Look at the tape. Jabari is an effortless defensive player right now. Not just bad, effortless. So no, I don't want to hear that about Fred wanting to show that he has Jabari, you know, as a guy he believes in in big moments on defense. No, that's a garbage take to me. I think what Darnell and other people were talking about as Fred saying, look what you gave me, look what you made me do, and sacrificing a potential game that they could win to send a message to say, you paid this guy $20 million, you want him on the floor late in games, you want this guy to be a big piece of what I'm doing, look what happens if I try and play him in big moments late in the game. We get eaten alive. It was a simple pick and roll. And like, the Pistons ran the same play multiple times down the stretch, where it was like, oh, Jabari and LaVine, put him in a pick and roll situation, easy too. Put him in a pick and roll situation, easy too. I hope that Fred is not that thick that he actually thought putting Jabari on the floor defensively for that possession was smart. Maybe it was him trying to send a message. To me, that makes sense, and that is something that he couldn't come out and tell to the media, because what kind of coach would do that?
That's where I was kind of going with it, is your latter answers, the sending the message to the front office and basically saying, look at what you guys gave me and look at how effective or ineffective it is for that case. So I put some of the blame on Jabari Parker for getting crossed up there, but he should have never been on the floor at that point. So this, a lot of the blame goes to Fred Hoiberg. And I know a couple people were reacting to us when we were tweeting out on Saturday night after the game, is like, well, why even stop? Why even stop at Jabari Parker? Why was Bobby Portis on the floor? Here's my explanation for Bobby Portis on the floor. The dude grabbed you 14 rebounds in the game already. So should Ish Smith miss that shot, or anybody on the Pistons for that matter, you need a dude in there that's going to grab a rebound. And Bobby Portis was that
and
guy.
Bobby was the best rebounder by far for the Bulls on Saturday night.
Absolutely. So at least... Two, like, we're not even thinking about this factor. Sure, okay, if Wendell Carter Jr. and Bobby Portis are on the floor together in that possession, maybe that double screen at the top where they had Zach LaVine basically stopped, maybe that doesn't even happen. And maybe the Pistons look to kick it out to three. Look, remember, the Pistons shot 43-pointers. I know even in a tie game it sounds crazy that all you need is a two-point bucket, but the Pistons shot 43s. So if you have Wendell Carter Jr. and Bobby Portis out there on the floor, at least they'll give you something from the perimeter. And that should be a factor, too. It's like Jabari Parker can't defend anything, even looking at the perimeter. And same thing with Robin Lopez. Okay, if you wanted Robin Lopez and Wendell Carter Jr. out there at the same time, Robin Lopez can't guard anywhere outside of 5 feet from the basket. So to me, that makes it's nonsense to have that the argument about Robin Lopez and Wendell Carter Jr. being out there at the same time. If it was me, I would have liked to see Wendell Carter Jr. and Bobby Portis out there for that final possession. And so that's, to me, why I put the majority of the blame on Fred Hoiberg's game management here. You had talked about it. They had a timeout to give. They had a foul to give in this possession. It just didn't make any sense, and it ended up costing the Bulls the game.
Yeah. I mean, Bobby did get blown by, and Ish Smith is, I think, an underrated guy when it comes to his quickness and his versatility offensively. He had a big game off the bench, 15 points on 6 of 11, 3 of 5 from downtown, 5 assists. Like, Ish Smith is a good quality player, and his quickness burns a lot of bigs in this league. And yes, Jabari got crossed up and went to his right when Ish Smith was going right down the middle, and there was no one to his right. It's not like Jabari had to keep one eye on a man to his right. There was nobody there. So, you know, he just got crossed up by Ish Smith. Bobby just got burnt, plain and simple. Like, Ish Smith faster than Bobby Portis. That is a fact. But I'm with you in that Bobby was a guy you should have had out there because the Bulls got cooked on the boards against Philly, and Bobby was their best rebounder Saturday night. If Ish Smith doesn't make that layup, Bobby gives you your best chance to get that board to actually make the stop happen. Because the Bulls have been giving up second chance points left and right through their first two games. So because of that, Bobby should be out there, but it's absolutely best rim protector you have. Wendell should have been in that game, not Jabari Parker.
100%. Let's go through a few more things before we get to some fan reaction from our voicemail and text line. You can hit us up there, 331-979-1369. The other problem that I had that I'm noticing early on in this season for the Bulls is they are struggling. You just had mentioned it. Struggling on the boards, and granted, you did in the first two games see some of the best front courts that you're probably going to see in the Eastern Conference between Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond. And then on opening night, you saw Joel Embiid. To me, that's where I see, you know, Wendell Carter Jr. has been thrown out there, and basically you have to go up against guys that have been former All-Stars, some of the best centers, some of the best front courts in this league. So giving Wendell Carter Jr. a little bit of slack here, but that's going to be a main problem, man, is they're giving up so many boards, so many second chance opportunities to other teams, and I don't know how they're going to be able to combat that. Maybe Chris Dunn will help them out a little bit coming back as far as having another guy that actually can rebound, but it's going to be a struggle. And Wendell Carter Jr. is showing his rookie phase already a little bit with struggling of grabbing rebounds and grabbing boards and kind of boxing guys out, finding himself in a little bit of foul trouble. I'm not worried about him at all, but I think it is worth mentioning that the Bulls are getting beat for a team that was in the top 10 last year in rebounding. All of a sudden, they're getting beat on the boards night in and night out. That's going to be something to continue to monitor, though, because the Bulls haven't been great at rebounding. Outside of Bobby Portis, you're getting rebounds from basically nobody.
Yeah, it's going to be a problem for the Bulls all season long, because not only are they not going to be a very good rebounding team, they're not a good team when they're asked to play transition defense. There is no transition defense that we've seen through their first two games. So, and it's a compounding problem. If the Bulls are missing shots when they are jacking up threes and Jabari's jacking up long twos and those long rebounds lead to quick, easy transition opportunities for their opponents, and the Bulls play no transition defense, that's a problem. If the Bulls are struggling to guard the perimeter and giving up big or giving up big numbers of outside shots, the outside shots that don't go in, there's a problem there too, because the Bulls have been, and there's truth to what you said as far as, you know, you had to play Embiid, then you had to play Drummond and Griffin. Like, some definitely some tough front courts that the Bulls have had to try to deal with through their first two games, but they're going to be giving up a lot of offensive rebounds, and they're going to be struggling to stop teams who are doing what they should be doing on the glass on their end and getting it into and turning that into easy transition offense against this Bulls horrendous transition defense.
Yep, it's going to be a tough task. And then tonight, even, you've got another tough task for Wendell Carter Jr. in DeAndre Jordan. So we'll see about that. But back to Wendell Carter Jr. real quick. The one thing I did like early on in this game against the Pistons is that the Bulls were getting Wendell Carter Jr. involved on the offensive end early, and then all of a sudden it stopped. Like, why? He went 4 for 6 from the field, and I think he hit three out of his first four shots that he made came in the first or the second quarter. Like, I don't understand that. You were getting Wendell Carter Jr. involved. He was doing well on the offensive end, and all of a sudden it just stopped. So if there's anything that I'd like to see from tonight's game is the fact that maybe with Chris Dunn now available and going to play tonight, you see Wendell Carter Jr., Chris Dunn get involved a little bit more in the pick and roll, and maybe that gets Wendell Carter Jr. involved a little bit more. But I need more than just 6 shots from Carter if this team is going to be an offensive force. Like, you can't continue to have guys like Jabari Parker shooting 13 to 15 shots a game. You can't have Justin Holiday checking up 11 or 12 shots, even though he was good on Saturday, 6 for 8. Still, I need more from Carter offensively. I need him to get involved, because when you do, it opens everything up on the offensive end for the Bulls. And Zach LaVine, as good as he's been shooting, teams are going to realize this pretty quickly and make adjustments on Zach LaVine. And then where do you go from there? So let's catch it before it actually happens and find a way to get other guys involved, especially when you see some of your offensive firepower in Portis not knocking down shots, Parker not knocking down shots. Got to find other ways for guys to get involved, and I think they need to look to Carter to do that.
Yeah, and the Bulls have had offensive lulls in their first two games, and those are the, you know, those are the moments that are really scary, because if your defense isn't getting any stops and your defense and your offense stalls, things can get out of hand, and that will certainly be the case again tonight. I mean, we saw this Mavericks team go blow for blow in a huge shootout of a game against the Minnesota Timberwolves on, I believe it was Saturday night. That was 140-136 was the final. They have all these great offensive weapons. I mean, you talked about DeAndre as the next front court challenge, but the rookie sensation Luka Doncic, they got DSJ, they got Barnes, they have all of these very tough guys like JJ Barea, probably one of the best backup point guards in the league right now. He's got 21 points, 21 assists, and only one turnover in his first couple of games. So I mean, I'm already having nightmares thinking about JJ Barea tearing up that Bulls second unit. It's gonna be a tough night. The Bulls are gonna give up 110 plus again tonight. I mean, I'm pretty much guaranteeing that being a reality. So offensively, you hope that the shots are falling and not just for Zach LaVine.
Totally agree. Last thing on this Pistons game before we get to some of the reaction from the fans. Even though the Bulls gave up that shot at the end, they still had an opportunity to win the game. Can you explain to me at all what the hell that was running that final play? Was it, okay, Zach LaVine's going to take a three here no matter what? And granted, Zach LaVine just lost the handle on the ball and it ended up going up in the air, and that was the game. But still, like, coming out of a timeout, you couldn't have run anything better than that? Like, that was your go-to game-winning play? Was inbounding the ball to Zach LaVine and having him take a three at the top of the key?
Chicago will rely on LaVine. Rises, knocked away by Griffin! What a smart play by Smith, and the Pistons win it!
Yeah, I had no problem with that. Dude poured in 33 points up until that last possession. Clearly your best offensive player on the floor all night. Clearly your best offensive player throughout preseason in your first two regular season games. And he had just knocked down a beauty of a three from basically that exact same spot on the floor where he was going on that final possession.
Right, that's fine if you're going to give the ball to Zach LaVine, but there's got to be a better way to run a play than that. It was basically just a small, it was a short inbound pass to Zach LaVine. They didn't even run anything. Like, so I'm okay with Zach LaVine getting the final shot. Of course, that's who I want taking the final shot. But I felt like there was a better way coming out of a timeout to run a better play to set him up to be open somewhere than what had happened where two guys had pulled up to the top of the key and then basically stopped Zach LaVine and he fumbled the ball and that was the game. So I'm fine with Zach LaVine taking the shot there. That's the guy that I want. But I just felt like the play call there after a timeout was head-scratching.
Maybe there is a scenario where you wish Hoiberg had drawn something up that was a little more creative as far as where to free up Zach and maybe a way to get him an open look. Maybe Zach coming off a screen as opposed to being the guy who gets the ball just on a simple inbound pass. I see what you're saying there, but bottom line, get Zach LaVine the ball, let Zach LaVine find himself an open shot, and let Zach LaVine take that shot. I think we're all on the same page here in that Zach LaVine, you know, certainly until Markkanen comes back and without Dunn the past couple of nights, is your best option and the guy who could really most efficiently create his own shot off the dribble. So let Zach LaVine do that. Fred's never been a great coming out of timeout, drawing up a play coach. That didn't surprise me. That's nothing new. Zach LaVine is the player with the ball in his hands. Let the player make the play. Don't let the coach make the play. Let the player make the play. That's my take.
All right. Well, we'll see if the Bulls can bounce back tonight against the Dallas Mavericks. It's going to be an uphill battle again, like you had mentioned before. A pretty solid backcourt for a pretty exciting young backcourt for the Dallas Mavericks. So we'll see what happens tonight. All right. We want to get some reaction, some voicemails, some text messages in here from you guys reacting from this weekend. You can do that at 331-979-1369. Matt, our first text message comes from Jeremy in Idaho. He said, missed the game tonight, had some family stuff going on, but looks like from the box score, Holiday played a pretty good game. Regardless of that, he played 37 minutes and Hutchison had zero. Thoughts on that? Matt, once again, Chandler Hutchison couldn't even check into this game last night. Where do you sit at with him and the cause for concern? Is your number 22 overall pick not even getting in the game last night?
It's not
night?
Great. It's certainly not great, Bob. Jeremy's right. The only reason Hutchison got in at the very tail end of the game against Philly is that it was a blowout and the Bulls were toast by the early third quarter. And he still, even in garbage time, only got like 1 or 2 minutes at the very end. So because the Bulls were in this game against Detroit on Saturday, he didn't see the floor at all. I mean, Justin Holiday is going to have games where he knocks down shots, which is what he did Saturday. 6 of 8, 2 of 3 from downtown, 5 for 5 from the free throw line, 19 points. And he's going to have really awful games like his game against the Sixers. I don't care about Justin Holiday. I've said that on the show before. Any minutes that he's playing to me are a gigantic waste of time. But clearly there is a problem where Fred and his coaching staff do not see Hutchison as being ready for real minutes. And we're thinking that he's probably going to get a lot of run with the Windy City Bulls. And some of it has to do with his slow shot release and the fact that he's just not very competent and ready yet on the offensive end. And certainly, Denzel is out. And, the bad news that we got over the weekend, Denzel is probably going to be out for at least another 2 weeks, which is what I told you when this ankle first, cropped up again, Jordan. I said, don't be surprised if this lingers and it takes a lot longer for Valentine to get back. Well, guess what? That's exactly what's happening. And Hutchison still can't get on the floor. So, when Valentine hopefully at some point comes back from that ankle, I don't see Hutchison getting any run on this team, which is, it's a problem for a first-round draft pick that the team was so convinced, or at least the front office was so convinced, was worth a draft promise. And, hey, 22, that 22 pick? Yeah, no, we got our guy. We're done. We got our guy. Well, your guy can't get on the floor, so that's a problem.
Yeah, and it's weird because Denzel Valentine, too, the issue with him, and I think this is going to be a little bit more of a concern for me throughout the season, that ankle that he's got bruised, this is the third time he's had a sprained ankle in that same one since he's been a Bull. So to me, that's a huge concern. And they said that there's still a bone bruise there. That's why it's going to be about another 2 weeks before they reevaluate him. Hopefully he's going to be healthy. But yeah, man, missing your three-point weapon off the bench, a guy that can come off the bench and score for you, it's cause for concern. And I think I'm a little bit more concerned about the health of Denzel Valentine now going forward. You know, between the knee scopes and that problem we saw when we drafted him from Michigan State, and now on top of all of this ankle issues, like, it doesn't scream optimism for me when one of the guys is constantly hurt and a guy that can help you off the bench. So I don't know. It's crazy that Hutchinson can't even get into a game that's a blowout like on opening night. And I can understand him not getting in the game just because Justin Holliday played well and a few of these other guys that were filling in. But it is kind of crazy when you're this depleted and a guy that you took with 4 years of experience in college can't even get on the floor. So that does speak to the volume of maybe what Fred Hoiberg thinks about Chandler Hutchinson. Going forward, we've got another text message here. This one just kind of a what-if about this Bulls team. This one comes from Faraz. He said, I'm from Chicago but going to school in Cleveland. If the Bulls had Fred VanVleet instead of Cameron Payne and Nicholas Batum instead of Jabari Parker, is this a playoff team? And then he follows it up with, I ask because I feel like there's more potential if they had a solid backup and a more defensive-minded wing. Maybe Batum isn't the right guy, but a more traditional 3-and-D guy. Matt, what say you?
I would say, if not a lock for a playoff team, certainly more likely to be a playoff team if you swap Payne and Jabari for Batum and VanVleet. VanVleet was one of the biggest reasons the Raptors had arguably the best bench in the league last year. The guy's a stud. And Nicholas Batum, a guy who has given the Bulls nightmares for several seasons, anytime, you know, whether it's Charlotte or, you know, wherever Batum has been playing in his career, he torches the Bulls. And I think he is a great underrated player in this league, even as he's kind of, you know, getting to the back end of his prime years. I don't think it's ridiculous to say that right now Nicholas Batum is hands down a better NBA overall NBA player than Jabari Parker. That is not a hard comparison and not a hard conclusion to draw. So yes, I'd say if Cam Payne were Fred VanVleet and Jabari were Nicholas Batum, the Bulls would be more likely to get a playoff spot in the East.
Yeah, I think I'm with you too. Fred VanVleet has carried over what he did last year into this season already. I don't know if you've gotten a chance, Matt, to watch the Raptors at all, but he looks just as good as he was last year. Mm-hmm. Man, I'm telling you, that Raptors team, I am becoming slowly but surely a huge fan of that Raptors team.
A lot of
year.
People ignoring them just because Boston and Philly, but man, if Kawhi is Kawhi this year, watch out for Toronto.
Agreed. Okay, a couple more text messages before we get out of here. This one from the 815. It said, big issue. What was Fred thinking playing Wendell 18 minutes on Saturday night? I genuinely do not understand this. As much as I love Robin Lopez, he shouldn't have been out there that much. He did make a few nice plays early on, but it's clear Wendell is already just about better than him in all facets of the game. Also, Parker finishing the game is going to help the Bulls, especially in close games. Opponents are going to jump on his lack of defense. Detroit went with him on Griffin in a late fourth possession, and obviously they went with the go ahead with Ish Smith, and that was pathetic. He looked like a 45-year-old dude at the YMCA who just couldn't move even if they wanted him to. He's got nothing. By the way, Parker has 20 million reasons to not talk to the media and be held accountable with questions about his performance. Shout out to Dwayne Wade. So those comments there, yeah, I think the one thing I grabbed from that is Jabari Parker's, like, now all of a sudden he's just not going to talk to the media after every bad game he has?
For the third time already, he declined to talk to the media.
Is that what we're going to do here all season long? Like, man, we're trying here, and I know that everybody's piling on Jabari Parker right now on Bulls Twitter, and everywhere you listen to Bulls talk immediately is negative about Jabari Parker, so I can understand that there, but dude, change your act. Like, even if you mm-hmm. came out to the media and said, you know what, yeah, this is on me, you know what, I've got to be better as a player, I've got to be better as a teammate, all of these things, like, even if you just came out and told the media and were truthful and honest, people would cut you some more slack than just ignoring and brushing off the media, and it makes you look bad. It makes you look even worse.
It makes him look like a guy who is trying to skirt responsibility, right? it's a part of the job. I know that coaches and players, whether it's the NBA or any other professional sports league, they have their days where the last thing they want to do is talk to the media. Bill Belichick, that is his day 365 days a year. Some people handle it better than others. Some people think that Greg Popovich is cute with his the way that he handles the media. I personally think that Pop gets away with being an ass to the media because he's Pop. Like, I love a lot about Greg Popovich, but I think that what I don't like about him is a thing that everyone else thinks is cute and funny. No, it is a part of the job, sir. Yes, you are famous. You make a bunch of money playing sports. Guess what? The media wants a quote from you. Part of the gig. Part of the gig. And the fact that Jabari three times already has declined to talk to the media, and when he has talked to the media, he's already had a few foot-in-mouth moments, and heck, maybe those two things go hand in hand. Maybe he's like, well, I don't want to talk to the media because anytime I say something to the media, people blow it out of proportion and are, you know, calling me lazy and say I don't care about defense and this and that and the other. Okay, well, then maybe just like try practicing. Work a little harder on not sounding like a guy who doesn't give a shit when you do talk to the media, and maybe we won't all throw some accusations at you, or at least say what's going on here when you decline to talk to the media. All across the board, it's a bad look for a guy who's not making a whole lot of friends in his hometown.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Matt. I think you explained it, summed it up completely. Like, even like blowing off the media, like, you have to expect them. Like, if you're not willing to talk to them, then it's a go.
Right.
Like, the media is not gonna hold back any punches from you and going to be overly critical. When you're making $20 million for one season here and you were supposed to come in as a starter and now you're coming off the bench, sure, we're going to have a ton of questions about you. And then just blowing off the media just
hypothetically, Jabari's on the floor for that final defensive possession. The Bulls get a stop. Jabari goes down and hits the game-winning shot on the other end. You think he's declining to speak to the media after a game like that?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. So that's just the hypocrisy that you got to call out. Come on, man. Jabari, you want to be that guy? You want to be the $20 million guy? You want to be a starter on this team? Had he been the hero last night, he would have been happily talking about the game and talking about his night and talking about his big shot. You can't crawl away and sneak away when things don't go well for you.
Final question here, Matt, as we wrap up. This one is from the 217. It says, Bobby definitely deserves his money. He's our core. He's our Draymond without the skill set. He's our leader off the bench. They should give him his money compared to Jabari Parker, who got blessed with Derrick Rose knees. LOL. Give Bobby his money, Bulls. I can just imagine the Bulls getting less back and blowing it up without blowing it up. Hashtag fire Gar Pax. Fire Hoiberg, fire Gar Foreman. Who wants to come to Chicago? Who has wanted to come to Chicago for real in the past 10 years. We need a draw. We have no attractive pieces at the moment, maybe Wendell and Lowry, but we haven't had any since the Butler fiasco. What can the Bulls do to change this? What do you think it is about the Bulls organization that holds back some players from becoming a better piece, such as Etuan Moore and Nikola Mirotic, who aren't pieces I would have kept, but they are good examples of pieces that are doing better in another coach's regime? Do you think it's the front office? Do you think it's Hoiberg? It was like this a little while Thibs was here and in the early 2000s. Would love to get your guys' answer on this. So a lot going at you, but Matt, he brings up some points, some pretty decent points. What do the Bulls organization have to do in order to change the stigma about players coming here and then leaving and then all of a sudden playing well with another team in another organization?
Well, my quick answer is we don't have time to get into that. That is a lot to unpack, and we are running long already.
That's a week worth of episodes.
I could talk for an entire day. As long as I stayed hydrated, I could talk for 24 hours about that. Long and short of it, though, to me, and we could maybe dive into this a little bit more in another episode later this week, it's ownership. That's my opinion. I just think that the ownership and management group of this team have failed to land big-name free agents. Most often, maybe if you want to give them credit by calling Ben Wallace and Pau Gasol and Carlos Boozer big free agent. No, I'm sorry. I'm not there. This is the third largest market. It is a great sports town. They should be able to attract the best talent in the league. They should be able to. They have not been able to.
I don't think they've been great at evaluating the talent that they have on their roster. Like, yes, we've given them credit for drafting. Great. But as far as the players that they have come through here and then the ones that they decide not to keep on the Bulls and the ones that they say, you know what, we're good without you, it has. It's kind of come back to bite them. You look around the league, the guys that the Bulls have gotten rid of have actually played better off the Bulls. One being
Guess what? I was just going to say, and it's not just players. It's talent in coaching chairs as well. Hashtag true. Ron Adams.
True.
The Bulls
true,
showed true, Ron true. Adams the door, and he is the most respected assistant coach in the league on a championship-winning team. I'm sorry, how can you say that that guy is not a guy you want on your staff?
100%. I'm with you, man. But just to follow up, Spencer Dinwiddie, Tony Snell, Nico Mirotic, Etuan Moore, the list goes on and on of recent Bulls players who've gone other places and actually have carved out a role for themselves and have played really well. Just those four examples. Go look at all of their stats from last year and just in the handful of games that they've played this year. All of those guys have found roles for themselves and have played really well. So that's where my question is the evaluation of the talent that you have in front of you. That, to me, is huge. That is a worrisome thing for me. As far as the Bobby thing, look, man, I am with this texter. Give Bobby his money and see what happens. Because, frankly, bringing in other free agents, bringing in other guys to fill those roles, haven't necessarily worked out for the Bulls. And banking on the fact that you're going to drive a bunch of quality free agents into Chicago, I'm not convinced either. The last 5 years have not told us that the Bulls can do that. And right now, as where it sits right now with this rebuild, you're not getting any players to come here unless you overpay them. So to me, I'm fine with keeping Bobby Portis around long term. At least you know what you're getting from Bobby as opposed to going out and getting somebody else to fill that role, paying him probably about the same money, and then it not working out. So at least you know what you have in Bobby right now.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Well, that's good about dude here on Locked On Bulls. We have Bulls and Mavericks tipping off tonight, so get excited for that. Maybe the Bulls can get their first win of the season. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, on Instagram, at Locked On Bulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. We'll get to all of those voicemails on Wednesday's mailbag episode. So hit us up there, 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.